Marco.
Let's do it.
Do you have your wings on?
My wings? No, I
fly without not because you're an angel. We all know that's not the
I'm Iron Man. So you're Iron Man. I don't have really wings. I'm just very powerful propulsion system.
Shoot fire.
Yeah, that's how I travel lately, actually. It's wonderful until I don't know, get shut down or something.
Jeez. Until your computer's compromised.
I know. You got me into a movie, so now I'm in a Marvel movie right
there
now.
There you are.
So get me out of that. Tell me why
we're here. Let's bring you back to closer to our own atmosphere here. And we're on our way to London. InfoSecurity Europe.
Yep. Very, very excited about that.
I know.
It's that time of the year.
It's that time of the year. Hopefully we'll get some sun in London. So we can enjoy some meals outside.
Don't count on it.
If it happens, it's a nice surprise and a treat, but I wouldn't bank on it, even in the summer.
Last year was amazing. It was a little bit too hot, actually, if I remember well. And that's that's weird to say that about London. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
I'll take that again.
I think we got tons of steps in as well. I certainly did. But we're not here to talk about steps and weather. We're here to talk about bits and cyber. So all things InfoSecurity Europe is essentially our kickoff for the coverage. We have a lot coming up for that. A lot of great conversations planned there, which we'll talk to the organizers to get a rundown and the lowdown of what's going on. So we won't try to recap that now. We're going to talk about Stephanie Hare and her session and the things that she's seeing in cybersecurity, some of the trends, what it's like to be a professional in this space and how to succeed in that as well. Mm. And maintain some credibility personally, and then hopefully extend that to the program through ethical means of delivery of services to your customers. So a lot in there.
What could go wrong?
Do we want to go there? The food supply chain, I think, was something we were talking about beforehand. But before we get into what you're going to be presenting at InfoSecurity London, in Europe and London, I know Marco and you had a chat before, but so people may have heard you on the show, but perhaps a few words about who Stephanie is and what you're up to kick things off.
My name is Stephanie Hare. I am a researcher, I'm a broadcaster, and I'm author of a book called Technology Is Not Neutral, A Short Guide to Technology Ethics. In terms of broadcasting, I'm fresh off of our very first 30-minute episode of AI Decoded, which is a weekly television show that is airing on the BBC here in the UK, but also globally. And it is on YouTube. Of course, we have a playlist. So we're looking at artificial intelligence for a number of reasons, but one that will make a lot of sense to a cybersecurity audience, which is that old chestnut of you are only as strong as your weakest link in cybersecurity. It really inspired the show in a lot of ways. Because as we all know, we often blame humans as being the weakest link. They're the kind of people who get tired and distracted. And so they click on a phishing link or a spear phishing link, or they can't tell if something's a deep fake or not. They fall victims of fraud and let people into their systems when they shouldn't. That thinking and training that I've had over the course of my career made me think that we could apply it to artificial intelligence, because so much is happening now with AI. Some of it's a lot of hype and grift because there's people making money off of that, but there's also some real change, and some of it's really exciting and some of it is genuinely terrifying. If humans are the weakest link in cybersecurity, my question as a philosopher would be, you know, what are humans therefore in the world of AI, and how AI and cybersecurity are going to interact, both offensive and defensive, creates yet more potential for humans to get things wrong and screw things up. And I don't like that. And I also don't like that the public at large, I think, is often left behind, both in cybersecurity discussions and in AI discussions. So Artificial Intelligence Decoded on the BBC exists as a sort of answer to that challenge of, what if we said humans aren't the weakest link? What if we could build them up? just like we would build up public health and get people sort of fighting fit. So we've got to get them informed. We've got to teach them what certain key concepts are. We've got to point where resources are if they wanted to go and take it deeper. I get a lot of parents and teachers asking me what their children should be studying or what kind of careers are available to them. Everybody's trying to figure out how to make the most sense of it and also how to protect young people. So I think knowledge is power. So if we can put knowledge into the hands of people, it's why I wrote my book. It's why I do a lot of op-eds that go into various newspapers. It's why I'm doing a podcast like this. I'm very grateful to get to chat with you today. It's why I'm doing the keynote on the 5th of June. And it's why I do a lot of television and radio, is I'm trying to go where ordinary people are so that cybersecurity and AI aren't just for experts. They really need to be for everybody, because this is a society-wide challenge. It doesn't make sense not to develop the talent pool, which we all know there is a talent shortage. So that's the approach that I'm taking. It's a wager. It may not work, but nothing ventured, nothing gained. And already the feedback from the public has been beyond anything that I could have dreamt. It's just been great. So ideas will be welcome. And I'm really looking forward to talking to everybody at the conference in June to get thoughts from you about what you wish the public knew about cybersecurity and about artificial intelligence, because we can then take that around, package it up, and turn it into learnings for people, outputs and artifacts. And it's probably quite enough for that one question.
But yeah, I don't know. You open up another million questions here, but more than a question, I want to make a comment, which is, you know, we don't trust the human, or at least we like to say that. We want them, though, to use what we called artificial intelligence. Would I always say it's the wrong name for it, because it sounds very human, and it is actually amplifying the human flaw on top of, you know, the intelligence that we have, and then we have a problem with it, right? Don't teach people what to look for, but we tell them, hey, you're already using it in the background anyway, and now we're going to put it on your phone, you're going to use it yourself, and it's going to get your jobs and blah, blah, blah. So we create this entire news circle that it's kind of, it need clarification. So where I'm going is, I'm glad that people like you are trying to explain this, but what do you get from the industry, and especially from the cybersecurity industry? Do you get that people shouldn't worry about that, let us take care of it? Or you get like, yeah, it is time to involve people, the users, in the process?
I think everybody agrees that we have a talent shortage, just in terms of sheer bodies with people going into the field. But we also have a diversity in the field shortage, which is fatal. Probably bad in any human endeavor, but particularly in one that's so creative in its problem and in its solution suite, like cybersecurity and AI. In both cases, you want the widest possible diversity, because you've got groupthink as a risk, you've got blind spots. So people are aware of that, but you know, the numbers really haven't shifted since I started working in cybersecurity many years ago. The number of women working in the field remains very, very low. All sorts of diversity. It could be linguistic, you know, like what languages are we building the AI revolution in? When you're looking at a large language model, what's it trained on, right? And who's English? Even if it's English dominant, it's who's English, because the English language is spoken very differently in different countries. None of these are neutral questions. And it's not fair for people whose language, you know, their first language might not be English, but they're being forced to always go through an English language tool. So all of that, racial, ethnic diversity, experience of having tools used on you, who has power to use tools and who's on the receiving end of them. These sound like social or political or philosophical or cultural questions, but they actually manifest technologically as well. And for a really good designer or a really good strategist or problem solver, hopefully you're taking that stuff into account at the very beginning. So my understanding from talking to my many, many clients and colleagues still who are working in this space is everybody knows we have a problem. And a lot of money is actually spent trying to improve diversity, and I think we're not really getting a good return on investment for it. GCHQ, which is the Signals Intelligence Agency here in the United Kingdom, has done a lot to improve their diversity. And I think that they've got a lot that we could learn from. And I know the US is trying to do the same at the government level. In the private sector, what's so weird is if you wanted to close the gender pay gap, for example, you could do a lot worse than to go into tech, right? You can make a decent living at this. But when you go and talk to young girls here about why they're not signing up for computer science at the high school exams here, are GCSE and A-level, so it's about 16 and 18, you know, and that's the path that will set you potentially towards studying these things at uni or other paths into the sector. They find it really boring. They find it really theoretical. Something's turning them off, which is so frustrating for anybody who works with young girls and like knows how absolutely brilliant they are and creative and just born problem solvers would be a great addition to any team. The idea that we're turning talent off is awful. And that's just with the example of girls. I'm sure it's a true for all demographics, really. What do we do to turn kids off from going into a field? So I think we know that there's a problem. Really not impressive results for the field. You know, if we had to mark ourselves as probably a C- in terms of solving it. One thing I would say, though, is I think we have to be more creative about paths in. So again, Code First Girls here in the UK has been working with GCHQ and a number of companies here to offer mid-career pivots to women. So like, say you've been working for 10, 20, 30 years, and now you want to get into cybersecurity. How do you do that? Someone has created that on-ramp. Yes, you have to do the work, but you know, people who are wanting to get into this aren't afraid of the work. What they just need is the opportunity and someone to build the bridge from where they are to where they want to go. That, I think, is what we need a lot more of, and making people feel open and safe to come from different backgrounds and ways in, and really valuing that experience that they're going to bring from something else. So that's, you know, that's again part of my wager is there's a lot that you can do. I've got some books here because this is a big part of my process, so I thought I'd share it with you. But just FYI, if you have not read Nicole Perlroth's book, ooh, look at my blurring. This is what it does is here. It's sorry. It's called This Is How They Tell Me the World Ends, and it won the Financial Times Business Book of the Year. So my point is you do not need to be remotely in cybersecurity to enjoy, read, and find this book valuable. It's all about the cyber weapons arms race. Like, that's a great primer. Anyone can read this, really enjoy it, and come out probably with some, you know, cool questions. Then I'm reading something called Offensive Cyber Operations by a brilliant scholar and former colleague of mine, Dr. Daniel Moore, who is now at Meta and has a fascinating background. And he's a student of a scholar named Thomas Ridd, who's also, you know, very well known in the field. So my point is, you could just read and educate yourself. The books are there, like everything's out there. The tutorials are online. There's incredible forums you can follow. So if coding is your way in, or you actually want to be in the code, there are paths for that. But there's also the more strategic path, the just learning from case studies that have happened. You know, if you were taking a historian's path of, well, what's it happened before? Who are the big players in this space? How is AI changing this? Again, as we mentioned, offense to defense. Who are the leading companies and countries, and who's really vulnerable? You could map that out without knowing any code at all and still be able to have a very intelligent conversation if you wanted. So I think it's that. That's really important to take to governments. It's really important to take to the C-suite or even to mid-career managers and be like, this isn't just something for your CISO to be thinking about. This is something for the whole organization to be thinking about, or the whole country. And everybody has to work together, because that's one of the things that's amazing in Nicole Perlroth's book, is she shows you how attackers learn from each other. Like, they're doing this reading, you know, their version, their equivalent of doing the reading. They're learning from one another. So you have to have the curiosity about the field. And that might be from a traditional engineering background, but it might just be, I am a resident of a borough in London called Hackney that had a cyber attack that shut down local governments for, you know, 15 months. And that might be the thing that like woke you up to that, right? Or you're a doctor and you were working at the NHS when WannaCry hit and shut down loads of our hospitals here. So you might never have been interested in cybersecurity until you got interested, because it suddenly got interested in you, to misquote Lenin terribly, right? So there's different ways to go about it. And my goal is to have a big tent. I want everybody to feel welcome if they're curious and interested, or at least to understand if they're not curious and interested, how it at least relates to them.
Mm-hmm. It's not the first time, actually, I heard this many times about this, the fact that you don't really need to code or come from computer science or math or engineering to understand all of that. And I mean, I'm with you. I mean, my background obviously has nothing to do with that. It's sociology and political science. And, you know, I'm like you. I picked this weird book. I'm reading now The Bottle for Your Brain by Nita Farahani, which is all about using this brain interface to operate computers, to operate things, but also to kind of show how meditation works, and at the same time being a data that you put out there that is very, very valuable, and it's a lot private. So it's kind of like the thought police is coming, and we probably need to think about it from a lot of different perspectives. Sean, I know I'm already doing the whole conversation myself, so I'm going to leave you some space.
Well, no, I was following your train of thought as well with it's the age-old problem where the technology takes center stage and we forget about the outcome.
Right.
And the ultimate outcome is our own personal well-being in a healthy society, right? And within a culture that we help define and feel comfortable within. And yet we still get caught up in, well, how does the technology work? Where is it failing? And we were talking before recording, Stephanie, about weather impacting food supply, perhaps. And your sense of, what do I do with this information? If it's presented in a way that's compelling and interesting, that gives you hope and a view for how to solve the problem, then perhaps you'd want to get involved and help solve the problem. I'm talking to you specifically, but in general. If it's presented in a way that seems obtruse or burdensome or scary or whatever, not welcoming, then I don't want to be part of the solution to the problem. And therefore the problem exacerbates and less people, and only those who have, to your point on AI hype making money, only those who have money to invest to exploit those who don't and exploit the fears that they have and the lack of understanding they have. It just creates this further divide, I think. And so I don't know how we change that, the conversation there specifically around cybersecurity, but I keep finding that we often go back to the tech, and the tech is not where we should be focusing. It should be on the people and the outcome.
Yeah. And, you know, what does good look like, and how do you plan for failure? So what's your resilience? What's your business continuity? How do you distribute risk? Who needs to know what? You know, are you collecting too much data? Like, do you the more attack surfaces you have, the more vulnerable you are. So why are you collecting so much? What are you doing with it? How empowered are your customers? How empowered are your users? And also, like, what's the audit trail? You know, so how do you tell who's looking at what? And it's, you know, I do not pretend for a second, by the way, that any of this is easy. If it were easy, you know, I can't even imagine that world. It isn't easy. It is complex. I'm just saying that, you know, human beings are incredible. We can put a man on the moon. We can go down and explore the sea. People can learn languages that they did not grow up speaking. Like, we don't, it's challenging, but it's not impossible. So at that point, I just get into sort of teacher mode, which is like, okay, if I've got someone who's here and I want to get them to hear to solve a problem or, you know, take on a challenge, what are the building blocks that I need? And what's the pace that I'm going to need to take them through that in a way that gets them like strong confidence, you know, ready to go out there. And eventually, you know, they can go off and start teaching themselves, teaching others, et cetera. Like the fearlessness factor of, yeah, this is hard, but I can do it, is good. And again, people do, I don't think you can work in cybersecurity, certainly for very long or in certain roles and not code. Like, I wouldn't want to sort of be like, oh, you don't need to code. You do. A lot of people do who are working in it, but there are some people who won't, who are doing other stuff, but that's complementary. And also, coding is like quite cool. It's quite fun. And again, it doesn't have to be the maths, physics way that we often are told. It can also be people who are really good at language. It can also be people really good at design or psychology. So again, that's what I mean by like broadening it out to get away from what I think are probably media tropes, you know, just like shorthand. I am wearing an obligatory hoodie for this conversation, but you don't have to wear a hoodie to work in tech. Wear whatever you like, just be comfortable because you're probably going to be sitting at a laptop for a long time. It's more that, it's the problem solving nature. So I still weirdly remain optimistic about it. It's more where I just think there are no quick fixes. It's continual learning. Again, if you're like smart and interested in the world, you kind of like that. You wouldn't want to be working on the same thing that you were working on 5 years ago. You'd want to, it's evolved. So it's an incredibly rewarding field. I do think market incentives are a bit skewed on it because in so many other things, you get judged and paid, remunerated and promoted based on what you've done. And so often with cybersecurity, it's counterintuitive. It's your success is based on what has not happened. You protected something from being stolen. You protected yourself from having a breach. That's really difficult to measure because most networks that get penetrated, people don't even know what's happened for, I think it's like an average of sort of 18 months. But it could be years, you know, and why is somebody in there? What are they doing? Are they stealing? Are they just sniffing around? Are they doing malware, ransomware? Like what's going on? Figuring that all out is really difficult to have this conversation to your corporate overlords. So I think chief information security officers often can find that really challenging because they don't know how to, they're not measured in the same way as their peers a lot of the time. And so that's a conversation as well. I guess there's probably good analogies again with the public health or even like the defense sector. And how do you decide somebody's a good secretary of defense? Is it because they take us to war or because they keep us in peace? You know, how diplomats defuse. Yeah. I know they judged on the number of conflicts that they calm down or what. So it's probably that. And again, just taking all of that to the public and making that part of organizational conversations and the like. Yeah. It would be great if we could get away from some of the stuff around the Terminator or again, the image of somebody who's a hacker working in his parents' basement or garage. We probably need some new television programs and narrative tropes with a bit more inclusive imagery just for people can see themselves. Cause it does matter. You know, if you're like, I think that's not great. So the field can do maybe a bit more, but I think all of us can also do a lot more. We must love our nerds.
I agree, and I am glad that you have an entire TV show to bring this to the table, because I'm afraid that the keynote time that you're going to have on InfoSecurity is not going to be quite enough for all of this, for the big picture. But I think you also touched on certain point that you will bring up to the keynote, and I want to remember this is part of the Women in Cybersecurity event, which was very successful in the past years, and they're bringing it back, and you're keynote in that. So how about we end these first chats on the road or fly on the whatever conversation on the airplane, whatever we decide to call it, with you getting in a minute of invitation for people to come and participate to.
Just hoping you were going to invite me to burn a bra on camera and be like, women in cyber, let's do it. No, I mean, my invitation is this talk is open to everyone because I'm sure everybody, men included, would be very interested to hear about women in cybersecurity. But it's particularly open to women who are curious to hear what women have actually been doing the whole way through as this field has developed, what some of the top women in cybersecurity are doing now, and how you can make a place for yourself, whatever place it is that you want, in this fascinating and rewarding field. So come, it won't be boring.
And of course, men should come too, even more, I think, because hey, you can't be inclusive and understanding if you just don't listen. That's a good way to, good point to start, good starting point. Sean, you're gonna go?
I'm going to be there for certain. I think, not just because of supporting, but I think the conversations will also lead to some of the things we just talked about, which is how do we diversely come together to solve these common problems that we share. And it's going to take all of us to do that.
Yeah, and a really quick way that we could solve that talent shortage in cybersecurity that plagues us as a worldwide problem would be if we stopped turning off 50% of the population.
Yep, that would be a good start.
That would help, for sure. Absolutely.
All right.
So a lot of good conversation there, no question. And yes, Marco, I'll be there.
Yep, so we will be there. Stephanie will be there. There is at the Excel in London. And there will be notes and links to the session, to the event, to the whole event, so you can see who is speaking, who is the company that are going to be there exposing all the new ideas and innovation. And of course, we will be there with our coverage, a lot of conversation on location before, during, and after. So stay tuned. And I'm excited. Hope everybody is going to follow us on this journey. Stephanie, thank you so much. It was great to see you again.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Thank you both.
Bye-bye. See you soon.
See you in June.
Oh, yeah. Bye. Coming up.